There's our cue. Okay, so thanks everybody for making some time tonight to join us. We are excited to be able to talk about this, and it sounded like from some of the responses we got, there's a lot of interest as well. I'm Ian Laverty,
I'm Joe Virenbelsky.
There's Joe. Good. Okay, so we're both here. We're going to kind of tag team tonight a little bit and go back and forth. And there's a number of things we wanted to discuss, and we're going to probably go kind of fast, just to kind of skim through some of these things. We want to be conscious of everybody's time tonight, and we want to hit some of the key things that people are asking about. So we are from Practice Kit. Practice Kit helps coaches and other helping professionals like therapists build a great-looking website and engage their clients with powerful HIPAA-compliant online coaching and counseling tools like secure messaging and journaling. And today we are talking about video conferencing, and we're glad that you're here. We're just going to jump right into it. So we wanted to kind of start with some of the basics. Video conferencing is not something new. It's something that probably everybody's familiar with, but we'll start just with some fundamentals just so we can kind of cover that stuff out of the gate. There are some basic components, of course, that are required to do video conferencing well, no matter what you're doing it for, whether it's something you're doing as part of your practice or just something that you do with friends and family. Of course, you need a high-speed internet connection. You have to have a webcam, a microphone, headphones or speakers, and generally speakers can cause some trouble with feedback, so sometimes it's nice to have headphones, and a video conferencing tool. And this is the software part of it. So you can have all that equipment, and of course you still need some sort of software to do the conferencing aspect of it. Of course, lots of devices support video conferencing, not just the desktop PC. And when choosing a service that you're going to use, you really just want to make sure that you pick something that is compatible with the devices that you're going to be using. A lot of times the devices will come integrated. If you're talking about a tablet, like an iPad or a smartphone, of course, you've got your webcam integrated in. Oftentimes, a lot of times, laptops, same sort of thing. So for a long time, though, video conferencing had been sort of one-to-one. That was in the early sort of days. Video conferencing, nowadays, we know the internet can support lots of different types of connections. We can do one-to-one, we can do one-to-many, or we can do many-to-many. You know, we're seeing the emergence of apps that support group counseling now. Generally speaking, the more features that a tool supports, the more that it costs. It's generally usually because group sessions, for instance, are a little bit more taxing on the video conferencing service. So there's usually an added cost associated with that feature. The most popular consumer tools for video conferencing do have a lot of nice features, and again, I'm just talking generically about the sort of tools that are out there and available right now. We'll get to practice and ethics and all that stuff in a minute, but of course, most people are familiar with Skype as the sort of leading video counseling tool out there, and it's popular for its one-to-one connections. You can Skype a relative or friend across the world. The other one that's emerging as a very popular tool is Google Hangouts, which is tied into their Google Plus service, which is their social media sort of thing. Google Hangouts is a relatively new tool, but it's got some pretty nice features. One of them is they call Hangouts, where it's a group video Hangout session instead of a one-to-one. It's that way by default. So sort of a novel idea, especially from the fact that they're leading with the idea of group Hangouts by default. So we'll talk about software tools a little bit more in a minute, but we just wanted to keep going with some of our basics here. So these days, getting all these things connected and hooked up is generally pretty simple and straightforward. Most computers for consumers in the last few years have come with majority of these things bundled together. In fact, it's not uncommon to find Skype even pre-installed on some Windows machines. You generally are finding machines that come bundled with a web camera and a microphone and sometimes even speakers. So a lot of times all that stuff is together. There's nothing particularly fancy or novel about video conferencing anymore. That's actually good news for people that are interested in getting into it or haven't done it yet, because that, what that means is that it's a well-worn path. A lot of the tools and setup are simple and well-integrated at this point. Speaking just from a technology standpoint, a lot of that stuff is pretty mainstream. So let's take a little step further and move from talking about some of the fundamentals here and to talk about actually getting started with applying some of this stuff into practice. So let's say that you have your conferencing software selected, whatever that one turns out to be, and then we'll talk a little bit more about software in a minute. But then let's say you've got that selected, you've got your audio, video gear set up, you've got your environment. So let's just talk a little bit about some of the tips for getting started. So the first thing we say, before you think about doing video coaching or video counseling, it's really important to be very comfortable with your software and your setup and how those things are all integrated. So it's a really good idea to practice this. If you don't have someone to practice this with, try recording your own video and speaking. So a lot of software tools will allow you to do a sort of instant record and playback kind of thing, or if you're on a Mac, there are some built-in tools for doing that. I'm sure they're on a PC as well. So sometimes that's helpful, a little bit awkward to look at yourself and watch yourself, but it's a really good exercise and helps you sort of evaluate how you come across when you're presenting and critique for little technical issues. So here's some of those things you want to look for when you're looking at this. Looking the part is probably the most obvious thing. You want to think about what you're going to wear, obviously, but you also want to sort of evaluate your attire based on some of your environmental factors. Some of these things are things that people sometimes overlook when they think about it just in terms of what you would wear. But think about your what you're wearing in terms of how it contrasts on your background. You don't want to look like a floating head, so if you're wearing a dark sweater and you're on a dark background, that can be a little bit funny. One way that I suggest that people kind of evaluate this is, if you can, take a still shot of your video of yourself and evaluate it from the standpoint of how you would feel about it being on your website. And you can sort of evaluate it almost from a stock photography perspective or something and say, boy, that person doesn't look happy, or well, I think that lamp in the background just doesn't look right. Sometimes being a little bit objective about your image can be really good. So the other thing is, of course, location. What does your client see when they're looking at your image? Again, you want to look at your still frame of your video and analyze it a little bit. Look at and see what's behind you, what's around you, what could be potentially behind you during the session. As in, is there something that might enter the frame? Will someone walk by? Is there a window? If you're in a home office, would you have kids or pets or some sort of other distracting visual? These are things that you're going to want to check, take a look out for as you're evaluating your location.
Mm-hmm. Those are all very good points, and from my perspective, these things happen all the time. I've got a 2-year-old, and he will absolutely come and knock on the door, make some noise on the outside. In my particular home office, it's underneath the kitchen, so when doing a meeting, I need to send my wife a note and make sure that she doesn't run the dishwasher. It can happen. It's outside the house or outside of my office, but it impacts the call. Internet connection speed is pretty important. Obviously, we're going to be pushing some information across, and testing it out is very important before you get started. There are some really good testing tools, and we'll include links to all of the things that we talk about here on the call. So a good testing tool is speedtest.net, and we'll include that link in the email that goes out after this call is finished, announcing that the recording is available. The FCC recommends that 4 to 6 megabytes per second is basically the minimum. a lot of the providers, depending on who you pick for your need, will tell you what their minimum is. And they're all striving, even though, generally speaking, Comcast and Verizon and so forth are all eager to sell you faster and faster internet at your home. The video providers are working hard to reduce those, you know, requirements so as to be able to reach a broader audience. And I can tell you it's changed just so dramatically in the last year, and I'm assuming it'll continue to get smaller as we go forward. You even said earlier that it's becoming extremely common, and that's absolutely true. The camera positioning is something that you mentioned in the 101, and there's some really important points to consider here. Taking that still shot of what you look like in your camera is going to help you figure these out. But for example, you know, having a laptop on your lap and using the camera that's built into your laptop is probably going to leave your client looking up your nose. You know, and so we can adjust that by stacking up some books, getting a box or something like that, and putting it on your desk and then setting your laptop on top of that. Obviously, you want to make sure it's a pretty good setup. You don't want your laptop falling over in the middle of the call. But if you want to invest for about $20, and we can send a link to some options, Amazon.com, you can find a pretty decent USB camera with a built-in tripod that can sit on your desk, and you can raise and lower it depending on the, you know, the height of your seat. And so with regard to camera selection, let's see here, we had talked about including some camera recommendations and so forth in the call, but what we found in our looking is that, generally speaking, they've all improved to the point now where it almost doesn't matter what type of camera you've got, either the one built into your laptop, assuming you can get it positioned correctly, or a very inexpensive USB camera would do the trick most often. Some of the more expensive ones offer things like panning, zooming, and so forth. I even had a camera for a short while that would follow me around the room. If I leaned to the right in my chair, the camera would zoom in. If I sat up very close up close to the camera, it would zoom back out and so forth. Pretty handy, but more of a novelty and a distraction to the folks that I was talking with. And distractions are certainly something you want to avoid. With regard to camera positioning, Ian has a ton of background in this, and he's got a comment here to add.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. You may have heard this, but the position of the camera really does impact how people perceive your attitude, your mood. There's a psychological thing that filmmakers discovered a long time ago, and anybody who's taken any film classes will be familiar with this idea, but essentially, if you shoot the camera pointing at a downward angle at the subject, that is, if when you're looking at the subject, you appear to be looking downward at the subject, it does something psychologically where you feel as though you are sort of in a more superior position. Filmmakers will use this effect all the time, and if you watch for your next time you watch a movie, look and see how the camera angle is positioned, and anytime they're trying to convey that the aggressor is looking at the person, you'll notice that the camera is pointed upward above, it's towering. And anytime that they're trying to convey that someone is is looking up to someone or in more of a submissive role, you'll notice that the camera angle is always lower. It's pointed up at the person. So keep those subtle cues in your mind as you're positioning your camera. What you want is something that is not quite straight dead on, just slightly elevated, but not so much so that you give this, you give sort of an aggressive stance when your viewer is looking at the camera. So not a big deal, not something you need to fiddle with a lot, but just something to kind of be keeping in mind.
Mm-hmm. And with that, the a lot of these subtle cues, camera angle, being one of them, but a lot of these subtle cues are interpreted. I think Ian has already mentioned that it only takes, a person just a few seconds, to make up their mind about a particular person, that first impression. But as we fire up, video conferencing, that first will happen at the outset of each of our conversations. And the analysis of your backdrop and the background and so forth, it happens every single time. Also in the category of these sort of subtleties is eye movement. When we're talking with somebody, naturally we're going to look directly at them. When you're sitting in front of a camera, you've got to stare into a camera. Now, their image is going to be on your screen, right? But your camera is above the screen. And so you'll want to look at the person you're talking to, which would mean to say that you're looking at the middle of the screen, which is at an angle that's lower than the camera. To compensate for this, if you sit back a little bit, maybe 2 or 3 feet, 3 or 4 feet from your screen and the camera, the angle will be much smaller. And it will, even though you'll be looking at the person, or you can be looking at the person, you'll convey to them that you're looking at them, right? Because you'll almost be looking at the camera. And whatever point you choose, that should be the point that you maintain throughout the conversation. I'm often looking at documents and so forth while I'm talking to the I'm talking to somebody on the video chat, and since we're doing this for 6 or 7 hours a day, we all understand that we're working while we're talking and so forth. The eye contact isn't quite as important for us, but it happens quite a bit where you're staring at a document and the person who's talking with you is watching your eye movement, as you're reading the document and so forth, and they'll call you out on it and say, well, listen, are you paying attention to me, or are you reading, your email? What are you looking at, and so forth. And it's incredibly important in creating confidence between yourself and the person that you're talking to. And to that point, with regard to confidence, often we'll be taking notes during a call, and I like to take a pad of paper and a pen, and at the outset of a call I'll hold them up, right, and show the camera and talk to the person and say, look, I'm going to be taking notes during our call, so if you see me looking down and so forth, if you see me doing this, that's what I'm doing, I'm taking notes. I want them to know that I'm not texting or something like that while we're on a call. And so just, to be upfront and honest about sort of what you're doing helps at all times. Ian, maybe you'd be best to talk about sort of framing it up.
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things also to keep in mind when you're framing your image up a little bit. And again, we're talking about how you're positioning yourself within the video image. Generally speaking, you want it to sort of feel as though you are sitting across the room from the person with whom you're talking. So you don't want to be in too close. You don't want to be, right up on top of the camera. You want to be sort of set back, like Joe said. Great ideas about, how to make it sort of appear as though you're looking at them while you're looking, both at them on the screen and also your webcam. But, one thing that's also helpful is to try rearranging your furniture and camera position a bit so that you are the majority of the video image. And, again, this is one of those sort of subtle cues. It kind of helps convey that you're listening and not distracted by surroundings. Oddly enough, when you seem small in the video frame, even if there's not anything else going around in the frame, it sort of gives the impression that there could be, and there could be room for other things happening. So framing yourself up to be the prominent thing in the frame is a good idea. Again, you know, just some other things about body language and etiquette on the call, and there's a lot of good information out there on the web about this, so we'll only scratch the surface here, but I think a good rule of thumb is just to remember that you really want to keep it similar to what your interaction would be like in person. It's very similar, but it's also a little different in that subtlety, of course, when you're with a person in a web video session, is a little bit difficult to pick up. So sometimes we make certain gestures that are very subtle when we're talking with someone, and you might want to exaggerate those just a little bit. So if you tend to talk with your hands, don't talk with your hands down your lap, but raise them up a little bit so that people can see and they can pick up on some of that stuff. Of course, the other thing that helps there is, you know, when you're working with a situation where the video quality might have degraded at some point during the call, that kind of thing, it can be helpful to not be too subtle in your movements. It's a fine line. The other thing, of course, is sitting upright in your chair. You want to be comfortable, but you want to be professional as well. Of course, things like swaying in your chair, slouching, propping up elbows on the desk, those are things, of course, that you want to avoid. And then just to kind of recap what Joe said, you know, just positioning the image of the user on the screen, sometimes near the camera lens, can be a little trick to help the client feel like you're looking at them instead of looking at the webcam. On my laptop, for instance, my webcam is positioned at the center top of my screen. So when I'm in a video session with Joe, oftentimes I will move Joe's image on my screen, my view into his video, up close to the webcam. And that way, as I'm looking at him, it looks as though I'm looking right at him on his side, but I can still see him sort of out of my periphery on my screen. So just a couple little tips for screen position.
Actually, Ian, with that, I noticed in our notes we're missing one really important tip that was made extremely apparent today for me. I was on a video call with a group, and I was being projected up on the wall, so I was a full, you know, 5 feet by 5 feet, you know, floating head on the wall. And one of the things you definitely want to keep in mind is that with these tiny little cameras and the world in which they're trying to capture being so small, there's a 3D effect that can be exaggerated dramatically. If you're using hand motions, and this is why I remembered it, if you talk with your hands and so forth, you want to keep your hands actually pretty close to your body, because this two-dimensional picture that's being captured, the small cameras that are being used don't have a great sort of depth perception or depth capturing ability. And so if you point and you reach out your hand and you point toward your camera or your screen, and your camera being so close to your screen, it actually will come across to the other side as though you're reaching through the monitor, you know, and making a swipe at them. I did that today, and half the room jumped. So you have to be pretty mindful of hand gestures and how just moving your hand, you know, from a position that's, let's say, I don't know, 6 inches from your body, you know, fairly close, and moving it, you know, to where at the bot, you know, a foot away from the monitor, you know, that small distance of 2 feet, you know, as you're reaching out, will come across as a pretty aggressive gesture. So you want to be careful of that.
So we should have done this. We should have done this at the video call. That would have been much more appropriate.
I think we should have. I think that at the end of this, we should invite folks to video chat with us, and we'll act all
there
of these out.
We could reenact some of this and post it on our blog for them.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, great. So there's a couple of other little technical tips in here. I'll just breeze through them. Looking at our time, I want to be careful that we don't go too late with these kind of things. But again, just a reminder about distractions. keep an eye out for things in your environment that could be a distraction that maybe aren't at the moment. Mute your cell phone, of course, or any sort of alarms that might go off on a laptop or iPad. If you're outside, you know, things like putting your dog outside, you know, those kinds of things can be good. And, you know, sometimes it helps to just put a note on your office door, simple things like that. I just wanted to touch briefly on lighting, just because this is kind of the last sort of tactical thing that you might want to consider as you're thinking about doing video sessions. Just a couple quick tips here. Don't sit with your back to a bright open window. It looks nice, but in person, but over the web and on a video camera, it's difficult to make the person out just due to the contrast. Don't sit in a way that a window is brightly shining on your face. That can kind of cause the image to wash out a little bit. By the way, if you do have a window behind you, you have blinds or something you can close, that can actually be kind of a nice effect. You can get a little bit of texture behind you without casting a lot of light, so that would work. You want to try for a relatively even light that isn't too yellow. And then if you wear glasses, it's really, really important to make sure you cut down the glare on your glasses. It can be really distracting for your client if they're not able to see your eyes, in which, you know, if you've got glare in your glasses, it almost has a machine sort of a feel for the client. So that's really important. Try to position your lighting and yourself in a way you don't get glare. There's some interesting ways that you can set up your own very simple lighting setup. As chance would have it, my career sort of I've had a lot of experience doing lighting, probably actually hundreds of hours doing video and lighting and those sorts of things professionally. And along the way, I picked up some tips and tricks for how you can rig up a very simple but effective lighting kit. And really what it is that you're looking for is just something that is not too bright and that casts an even light. And I found that there's some very simple clamp-on lights you can pick up from the hardware store. Hardware stores also carry generally some diffusing material, diffusing paper. You just put that on there, and it's very easy to set yourself up with a simple light kit. One of the things we are going to post on our blog in the near future is a little tutorial just for that. So if you're interested in putting that stuff together, if you're kind of handy, we can give you a shopping list and help you figure that out. So with that, I think I just wanted to – that kind of concludes a lot of our tactical things. And again, you know, we're just really scratching the surface. We'll come back and cover some of this stuff in our blog posts and e-newsletters in the future. So definitely check back if you'd like more information on these things or get in touch with us. Let's move from here into talking about actually doing sessions and whether it's a coaching session or a counseling session and some of the things to think about as you're planning. Obviously, scheduling is going to be an important thing, but I think that speaks for itself. Probably the only note that you might want to make there is, as with any other session, just make sure that you are clear about your cancellation policy with your client. I know those were a couple of the questions that came up. Some people were wondering how to handle that. And just be clear, I think, with your client in terms of what it is you want the policy to be for video sessions. One of the things that's really helpful to do, I think, is to have an orientation session. And it could just be part of your first session with your client. But it's a really good idea to do just some sort of brief orientation for the video service specifically. And there's a few things in here that you're going to want to cover. If you're providing therapy in particular, you're going to want to definitely look at some of these things. And I'll note here that the American Telemedicine Association has a really comprehensive set of practice guidelines for video-based online mental health services. If you haven't checked that out, you'll definitely want to do that, and we'll have a link to that on our blog. But they've got a very comprehensive guide and some recommendations. And one of the things that they talk about in there is in your orientation session, making sure that you go through the informed consent process with your client. And they actually recommend that you do it in person. So this could be in addition to, you know, other consents that you've done.
So that's a good resource for that. Deanna Nagle also from the Online Therapy Institute. Of course, everybody's probably familiar with her, but she's got a series of guidelines on her ethical frameworks. Some of them speak directly to practicing online when it comes to video counseling or video coaching. And there's a lot of really good information in there as well about sort of how to set expectations for clients and how to write your own policies. So, again, in addition to informed consent, things like your recording policy, both for yourself as well as what you would want your client to do or not do when it comes to recording. Other sort of fundamental things like payment policy, when that's going to happen and what the client should expect. So putting some of those things together, what I would recommend is having a very standard guide, write yourself your own standard guide for that orientation and just do that with every client, go through the same kinds of steps. And if you can, provide them with some information as well. And we'll talk about that in just a second. Some of the other things you're going to want to plan for in a session, you're going to want to think a little bit about, what do I do if there's a dropped call or if there's, some feedback problem on the line. Again, this is video online, and anybody who's ever done anything with video online knows that there are always connection problems. It's a guarantee. You're guaranteed to drop a call. You're guaranteed to run into some sort of garbled sound or something. No matter the connection, it's going to happen. But just plan on it and be ready for it. Know what your policy will be. One of the things that the ATA actually recommends is to communicate that plan to your client. Again, this is something that you could do as part of the orientation or even beforehand, but being very clear about what that is. For example, you could say something like, if we disconnect, we'll try to reconnect within 10 minutes. And if reconnection isn't possible, then just email or call and we'll reschedule our appointment. Something like that would probably suffice. Just make sure you're clear about it. And then in that same vein there, helping your clients have what they need to sign on is going to be important. It could be that you're working with clients who are excited about this idea but haven't done it before, and they're not familiar with the kinds of tools and software they need. And so it's sometimes helpful to have a page on your website or maybe a document that you can send them beforehand that includes things like required downloads, required equipment, of course, webcam, microphone, that sort of thing, recommended system specifications, which you can generally get from your video software provider. So things like, use these kinds of browsers, not these kinds of browsers, and make sure that your computer is relatively new. You can get a lot of those specs from whomever is providing your service. And, of course, recommended connection speed. So if their speed's not fast enough, they're going to have a bad experience. And if you're not familiar with video conferencing, your client might want to be frustrated with your service or something, and you want to make sure that you're clear about where the problem might be. So this is something that we are working on a little guide for that people could use, and it's something that we would love to share. So if you come to our site and join our newsletter or follow our blog, that'll be coming. You can find an example of what a client getting started guide might be like. When it comes to recording video calls, I know that's something that people have asked about. If that's something that you would like to do, if it's important to the service, just make sure that you find a tool that offers that feature. If the tool that you really like doesn't have that, it could be a little bit more involved to handle video recording, just because you generally are going to need another software tool to go along with it. So be thinking of that. And, of course, it goes without saying that if you're practicing in therapy, you'll want to just make sure that you follow the guidelines for recording and storing that information.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And those guidelines can be pretty involved. If you choose to utilize a service that an online service that provides recording on, let's say, on a server, right, where you don't have the recording yourself on your laptop or on your, you know, in your infrastructure, that's the fundamental difference. If you're using a service that provides recording support, it'll be absolutely important that you go with a service that will sign a BAA and who obviously is HIPAA compliant. If you're going to be storing your own recordings, you'll want to reach out to someone familiar with the rules of compliance, if compliance is important to you, and learn about who has access to those machines, whether or not you're going to be using cloud services for storage, or if, you know, for example, you've got a backup hardware, right, that's attached to your laptop, you know, in which the recording would go to that backup device. Maybe it's a hard drive or something like that. You know, what types of encryption you might have on that hard drive, where does it go? Does it go in a safe, you know, or does it sit on your desk? you know, is it a combined device that you're using to store your personal pictures, right, your family photos, in addition to these extremely confidential recordings and so forth? Lots of things to consider there. On that topic, security and confidentiality is the number one question we get. Things like, is Skype or Hangout that we've talked about here on this call, are they secure? Are they HIPAA compliant? Can they be? Right. These are great questions we get a lot. In looking for some material for our call today, I tripped across a couple articles that I think are just really, really well done and break those answers down pretty clearly. And we'll include the links to those articles in the emails that go out. And we'll be quickly writing a blog article within our own blog to promote them further, because I think they did just such a great job. and I'll give you some short answers here. The short answer is that Skype is secure, but it is not HIPAA compliant. Hangout is also secure, but is also not HIPAA compliant. And the difference between security and compliance is security just means simply that your call can't be kind of hijacked, meaning, you know, when we establish a video call, you know, there isn't a way for someone to, well, within reason, you know, do some kind of wiretapping and listen in or something like that. Confidentiality, which is very much related, is where the line starts to get a little bit more blurred. Some of these services like Skype and so forth, your contact list, your call log, those things will exist certainly within the Skype, you know, servers and so forth, but they'll also exist on your machine, whatever you use to make that Skype call. If it's your phone, you've got some software installed on your phone and make Skype calls, or if it's your laptop or your tablet or what have you, that Skype call history is available. And so unless you're protecting that call log in the same way that you would protect your, you know, confidential case notes and so forth and files related to your clients and customers, then you can see where the breakdown starts to occur. Skype, made by Microsoft or provided by Microsoft now, and Hangout, provided by Google, don't make a claim of being HIPAA compliant. They won't sign a business associate agreement and so forth. They'll speak to security, and that is important, but that is not the end of the line. So seeking out a service that is important. And the FDA keeps a register of folks that do make that claim, and a link to that register will be provided for you to help and choose services. The business associates agreement is a very confusing thing. There are clauses that allow a technology provider to opt out of signing it, to claim they're a conduit and not actually a service provider. And that is a gray area. That's a point at which a lot of the sort of alarmist blog authors and so forth that are speaking to whether or not Skype should be used in a coaching or counseling situation, like to point out. But the bottom line is that while they are secure, they're not HIPAA compliant. There are a very large number of video chat pieces of software that are compliant. VC, which is spelled V as in Victor, S as in Sam, E, .com is HIPAA compliant, and that's the one that we have in our research come to appreciate. We like the way their documentation is very clear and easy to understand, the software is easy to install and so forth, and they're working hard to bring it to all of the platforms. We think that's important when choosing. I'm an Android household. We've got Android phones and Android tablets and so forth. Ian is a iOS. He's an Apple person. We don't hold it against him. But if we wanted to use, he's been converting me for years now. I have Mac. for us to use that as a piece of software, we'd both need to use it at our laptops because they didn't have, the handset capability yet. Couldn't use our tablets to communicate. They now have the Apple version, out, and the Android's on the way. So we like what they're doing, but that's something to consider when you're thinking of your customers and the services you want to use. You want to make sure to choose a service provider that works with what you assume your customers might use. So I think we've arrived at the questions period. Ian, I think you've accumulated a few.
Great. Yes, so we had a couple of questions. We actually had a lot of questions come in. Again, there seemed like a lot of people that were interested in the call, and I'm sure other people will be picking up the recording and probably having other questions. So if that's you or if you have questions along the way we can't get to, as always, don't hesitate to drop us an email, and we'll provide that info at the end of the call. One of the questions we had, again, I'm just looking at our time, so I want to pick a couple here, but one of the questions that we had was, does adding computer memory help with video quality or not so much? And the answer to that is it doesn't really help, no. There are some things that your memory will help with if you're running lots of tabs or, you want to run multiple programs at a time or something like that. That can be a way that it will help you out. But in terms of the quality that you're going to see in your video sessions, you're not going to see any difference, really. It's really all about connection speed. That's really what you want to focus on, even more so than camera quality. You could buy a very, very, very nice camera, but if your connection speed is poor, generally your video conferencing provider will degrade the quality of your video to compensate. And so that's why you really want to make sure that if you're serious about doing video sessions, you want to have pretty decent internet speed. One of the other questions we had was how to handle technical difficulties when connecting with clients by phone. Things like distorted speech, dropped calls, those things can be distracting. And yes, again, count on it. It's going to happen. You're going to have a distraction. You're going to have an interruption from time to time. There's definitely going to be instances where you get garbled audio or video and you've got that weird fuzzy thing happening and you're not quite sure. What you really want to make sure you have in your mind is a couple of different things in terms of your policy for managing that. And this, it actually might not be a bad idea to write some of this stuff out for yourself as sort of your own sort of operating procedure. But one, think about your attitude and the way that you handle those things. Again, if you know going into it that is a very likely thing to happen, it can help you stay positive and stay focused through that. You want to convey to your client that it's not a big deal. It's not their fault. It's not your fault. It's just part of what happens with the technology, and that's just normal. So you want to try to maintain control from that standpoint, control how you handle that situation. But it might be a really good idea to have also in the back of your mind sort of a second thing. At what point will you decide that the quality is just degraded to the point that you should reschedule the call or try something else? Hopefully this doesn't happen often. If it does, you want to look at your internet connection because that's the likely culprit. But it's one of those things where you're going to want to just pull the plug at a certain point if you're not able to get what you need. And again, going back to the ATA, they actually speak to this and speak to certain things that you should use as sort of a guideline for the quality in terms of how you can see the client and how you can interpret what they're doing, you know, their body language and those sorts of things. So if you can't pick that up well enough, you know, you might just need to just call it a misfire and reschedule. So, yeah, just have that in the back of your mind. Like I said, I wish we had a little bit more time to go through more questions, but again, I want to be sensitive to everybody's time. Definitely feel free to email all those things if they come up, and we can happily respond to your email. But just to kind of recap our call, know your tools and equipment really well. Make sure you've had lots of time to practice with them and you're very comfortable and you've experimented with some of these scenarios that we've talked about. I mean, what happens in a dropped call or what happens in an interruption. The more comfortable you are with your software and your tools beforehand, the easier it's going to be for your brain to manage those other sorts of unexpected things that come up along the way. So it's important to be comfortable. Make yourself a checklist or some sort of operating document for yourself. Sometimes these are called standard operating procedures, and it might be helpful for you to draw one out for yourself and say, this is what happens at the start of a call. This is what happens if it's a brand new client and we go through this. This is how I want to spend the time during the call depending on the session length. This is how I will determine whether or not the call needs to be ended based on a quality issue. And this is how I'll wrap up the call. This is what my client can expect. And along with that, you know, having some guidelines for your client, both in terms of how you expect the session to go, but also what you expect from them in the session. And you know, you might want to, again, this kind of goes back to, you know, environmental things, but you may want to actually go so far as to say, here's really what we want from you in terms of when we do the call. You know, we want to make sure it's distraction-free. So please, you know, please put your dog away. Please mute your cell phone. Put yourself in an environment that's private, if at all possible. And especially for those who might be doing therapy, again, there's some guidelines around this, you know, doing your best to make sure that you're not somewhere where people can overhear. You know, those kinds of things kind of come into play more. So, and then I think the last thing is to be happy. It's easy to, especially people who aren't as familiar with technology, to kind of project a sense of anxiety or nervousness. And it's so funny how sometimes that stuff, you wouldn't think about it. You know, it's not something you are consciously projecting, but it can come through across the screen if you've kind of got a furrowed brow or you're sort of, you know, you're feeling a little bit flustered getting on the call because you weren't quite comfortable with how to set up the software initially before the call. Again, this is why it's so important to be really familiar with your setup so that it's not top of mind, second nature, feels natural, as natural as possible. And that way it'll only the attitude and mood you want to project comes through on the call. So again, technical problems will happen, remain upbeat, and it'll be great. So this is an exciting time for people who are jumping into video counseling or video coaching. There's so many advances that have been made in technology and software. It's a great time to get on board with it. And hopefully we've outlined during this call some good tips that will help you feel confident, or at least get you started with questions that will lead you to feeling more confident. It's important, obviously, to have a resource that you can turn to for those kinds of things. And we would be happy to be that for you.
Yeah, exactly that. Ian and I, we live about 200 miles away, and we're on video chat, like I said before, about four hours a day. So if, as you're getting into this, if you'd like to set up a video chat with either one of us, we'd be happy to help check your lighting, answer your questions, and, kind of evaluate what it looks like from a client's perspective. Happy to. We're working on integrating VC, as I mentioned earlier. That's the tool that we've come to appreciate the most. We're working on integrating that into our offering and expect it to be live in February. If you'd like some help getting to know that, certainly. But if you choose something else, we're familiar with most of them at this point.
Yeah, and I think that, calls like this, we hope to really demonstrate our capability and our eagerness to help any way we can. And, I think that probably is one of the big differentiators between, working with someone like, our team and Skype, that we are definitely here to help. We're just a video call away, so to speak. So definitely don't hesitate to reach out. We'd be happy to help. We've only scratched the surface in this call, of course. There's a lot more detail and other things that we'd love to talk about if we have more time. But we do want to encourage everyone to visit our website and sign up for our newsletter, because these are the sorts of things that we cover in our newsletters and on our blog. So if you go to www.practicekit.com, that's practice. K as in kite, I as in ice, T as in Thomas, .com/newsletter. You can sign up for our newsletter there. And when you do that, also you'll be on the list to be notified when we launch video counseling and video coaching into Practice Kit. We're really excited. Like Joe said, we've been working on this for a while, and we've taken our time because we wanted to pick the right team to partner with, and we're excited about the offering that we've got, and we think that people will love it and find it really easy to use. So do that, sign up for the newsletter, and we'll definitely let you know when that's integrated. So I think that's it for the call. Again, just thanks so much, everybody, for taking some time out of your night. Thanks also to Amy and Ellen at the ILCT. We so appreciate them and enjoy working with them. And you can reach us at Ian, that's me, Ian, I-A-N, at practicekit.com. And Joe's email. Go ahead, Joe.
Not surprisingly, it is Joe, J-O-E, at practicekit.com.
And we promise next time we do this, we'll try to do a video session, so it's even more engaging. So that's it. Thanks, everybody.